Good morning, everyone. I'm Grisha. I'm a compulsive overeater. And welcome, Kate. Welcome any other newcomers. Please keep coming back, no matter what. I'm going to just tell a little bit of my story, and it's only my story. So if it sounds good to you, you might try some of the things I did. That's what happened to me. Like I had a sponsor. I had a friend in OA who told me what he, my first friend I had who 12-stepped me into OA told me what he did. I did what he did, and I got what he got, which was physical recovery, emotional and spiritual recovery. And speaking of the 12th step, I always like to start out with literature because the program is in the literature. It's not really, you know, I can say a lot of stuff that could rub people the right way or the wrong way. So at least this has been through the filter of 100,000 OA members, you know. So we now have a message of hope to carry to other compulsive overeaters. We have experienced the miracle of physical, emotional, and spiritual healing. Now we know that we don't have to fear anything that comes to us. We know we have a way of facing each situation squarely and sanely. We choose not to eat self-destructively. We find relief in the steps instead of compulsive eating. The 12th step invites us to continue the journey one day at a time for the rest of our lives. Concentrate on our OA experience. As we work the first 11 steps, the principles embodied in them have begun to replace our old way of life, which centered on self and compulsive eating. In step one, we learn the principle of honesty. In step two, hope. In step three, faith. In step four, courage and integrity. In step six, willingness. Step seven, humility. Step eight, in step eight and nine, we looked at the damage we had done others and set about repairing it. We learned self-discipline and love. In step 10, perseverance. In step 11, spiritual awareness. In step 12, service. That's all from the 12 and 12 of OA. Actually, well, it's from the old 12 and 12. We have a new one. So I love this meeting because it's kind of like coming to therapy. I consider all OA members part of my family. It's like, it's where I was able to finally be freed from the compulsion of overeating. I usually come to this meeting only when I speak because I live in San Francisco and I have some other program meetings that I go to on Saturdays as a practice. So when I come here, it's like, what's happened in the last 6 months or a year or however it's long it's happened, you know, like. And one of my favorite spiritual people has a saying, which is that life is wretched and life is glorious. It's both, you know, and it's like, how do we hold the wretchedness and the gloriousness together? And, you know, I've been to so many professional development things where they say, what are the pits and cherries? Well, that's food. Maybe we shouldn't use that in that way. And then there's like the pluses and deltas. And I got to come up with like a really good comparison of like the glorious and the wretchedness. But so I was just kind of, during my share, hopefully I'll just kind of reflect on some of the gloriousness and wretchedness since the last time. But for the sake of the newcomers who are here, just so you know, I qualify for this program. I have pictures that I can send around if you want to see proof in the pudding. And I've been in OA for 21 years, and I've been abstinent for 21 years. I have, my top weight was about 320 pounds, so I've maintained a weight loss of 100 plus pounds. I'm a century person, as we say in OA. I don't eat flour, sugar, or grains. That's my food plan. The way I measure my abstinence is whether or not I stick to my food plan. So, three meals a day, no sugar, no flour, no grains. If I eat that way, then I'm abstinent. If I decide to eat something with sugar in it, then I'm not abstinent. So, in the beginning, it was very, very difficult. I had to go to a lot of meetings. I got a sponsor. I read the literature. I did service. I did everything I had to stay abstinent. Often that was going to sleep because I didn't like to be awake if I wasn't going to be able to eat what I wanted to eat when I wanted to eat it, especially in the evening. So I would often go to an OA meeting, eat my dinner, and then just go to bed because I didn't want to be awake from like, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 all the way to midnight. I couldn't. I just couldn't figure out how to do it. And then through step work, And through slowly giving away substances, first it was sugar. I heard that, thanks. First it was sugar, then it was flour and grains, and then I started to weigh and measure over the course of, you know, these 21 years. So it wasn't like overnight I became the, like, clean eater of the world. But slowly I just got more and more honest about my food and got more and more in touch with the physical and the mental obsession. And I guess I love that the obsession has been lifted in this way. Like, I still, when I go to Starbucks, I look at the glass case and I think, which shelf would I eat? If I was so I do this kind of silly stuff, which they say, don't do that. You know, it's like in the literature, don't fantasize about food and don't reminisce over old food behaviors. Sorry, I do that. I break that rule sometimes. But the difference is, like, my arm doesn't go like this, and my mouth doesn't say, I'll have four of those because I'm having a party. I just don't have that, like, physical compulsion anymore. You know, it just doesn't manifest as physical like it used to be. It is still mental. Sometimes I'll entertain the idea, and then, you know, one of the slogans is think. It's like, think it through. Like, what would happen if I took that bite? Would I really ever just stop at one? Would that be interesting to me at all? It really wouldn't. Like, I'm interested in 1,000, not one bite, you know. So one meal at a time, I just stayed abstinent, and I kept working the steps. And I had a sponsor who said, any problem in your life, there's a solution to any problem in the Big Book. And I've just found that to be true. Like, if it's like a new way of life. It's a new way to face things. No, I'm not. Fearless. I still have plenty of fears. That life is still glorious and wretched, but instead of, like, only knowing how to eat over it, or drink and drug, or smoke over it, like, I actually now have steps and a program to follow to get through whatever I have to get through. So, what that looks like for me today, let's see, since I've been here last, there have been quite a few changes, actually. First I got through physical recovery. I lost 120 pounds. I had to, like, learn how to be a person in a normal sized body because I hadn't been in a normal sized body since I was 8 years old or something. So I had to learn how to, like, go shopping for clothes, how to wear different clothes, how to handle the, like, people being attracted to me, how to actually have physical intimacy, because until I was in OA and abstinent, I didn't really have sex very often. I was too ashamed of my body. I had to learn how to just function in a normal sized body, because I was so used to being morbidly obese that, I don't know, it's different, you know, it's a different kind of life. And a better for me, it was much better. But also scary in different ways. It was scary being morbidly obese, and it's scary to be in a normal sized body, but the fears I now work the steps around. So there was that, and then there was, I hated my career. Like, as my life cleaned up, I hated my job every day. I was miserable. And so I made a decision to just start taking action. It's a program of action. And I worked the steps around career, and I ended up going back to school full time, part-time, then full-time, then part-time, then full-time, then part-time, then full-time. And in the end, I finished my degree, and I went back and got a teaching credential and became a teacher. Then I had to work the steps around being a new teacher, because that was really scary and crazy. Then I got in my first long-term relationship, which was scary, and I had to work my steps around my relationship. Then after 7 years living together and being in the relationship, it ended, which I had to work my steps around, get through. Food was, you know, food would provide, like, if I were to eat compulsively over those things, it would provide relief as long as I was chewing and swallowing. Mm-hmm. The minute the chewing and swallowing stopped, it's like back to, like, I hate myself, this is terrible. So I didn't do that. I called my sponsor, I talked to program friends, I went on and on and on about my problems to anyone who would listen. I wrote about it, I listened to podcasts and everything and just worked it out and survived all that stuff still abstinent. My mom died in there somewhere. I owned a building with a drug addict, and it got really bad over the course of 13 years, and I had to force the sale of it. And so I went to being a homeowner landlord with a 4-unit building to having to force the sale of that and be a renter in San Francisco, which is not a happy thing to be. And then, is that, so I have 5 more minutes?
Yes.
Okay, cool, thanks. And then action, like I entered these lotteries in San Francisco for the below market rate condos with the mayor's office, and I won after 23 lotteries. Mm. I got a condo. So it was like, it took footwork, but it happened, you know? So now I have a permanent place to live in San Francisco that's affordable. And depending on who you are and what you think affordable looks like. But anyway, I just say all this to give hope, because mm-hmm. I didn't have any hope around my housing, around my job, around my food, around my obesity, around, you know, my terminal singleness. I didn't have hope in any of that stuff, and then the program slowly, as I worked the steps, like I got hope and I had joy and experience and like success in all those areas. And so recently what happened was, I was at 8 years, I was at a school that was a very difficult school. I loved that school, I loved my teaching community there, I loved the children there, but it was having a physical, emotional, you know, impact on me that I couldn't take anymore. I was on medication, I was like anxious, I couldn't sleep, I had compassion burnout, and I had people, you know, coaching me, my sponsor and program friends, saying like, you need to make a change, and I was terrified of making a change. Change is not something I like. So I just took some action, and it was, you know, in the moment it felt like just torture to get my resume done, to make this call, to do that email, to look at this website, to start taking action, meanwhile trying to, you know, deal with all the insanity of my job. But anyway, in the end, then all of a sudden it happened, like bing, 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 and I got a new job. And so I've started this new job. I feel horribly guilty about leaving the really needy children that I left, but I am like, it's like I've landed on a new planet, you know, like I've already got, you know, children. I teach kindergarten, so I have children who are like giving me attack hugs and saying they love me, and, you know, like, instead of like, F you bald asshole, you know. So, you know, so like, I feel guilty about how much abundance and joy and serenity I have in my life. But it's not like that every day, you know, like, there are issues. So, you know, so, like, I mean, I think I gave some of them. Like, in all these areas of my life, I had a really low point. And I think of my life in recovery as like the stock market. Like, it's up and down. But overall, over the years, it's tended to go up in general direction. And then, you know, just as far as like staying abstinent no matter what, I just say that to myself, like, no matter what, I have to stay abstinent. There's no excuse to go out, because it's just going to make life worse. And I mean, I'd rather be locked in the trunk of your car between meals if it means I'm going to be able to stay abstinent. You know, like, anything it takes, whatever it takes. And in the early days, it took a phone call. Like, I was abstinent 3 days. I always tell this story. I was abstinent 3 days. I came back to my cube at work. Somebody had left me a giant slab of German chocolate cake with a fork in it. My favorite, oh my God, absolute favorite kind of cake. And I looked at it and I thought, I've only been abstinent 3 days. F it, you know, I might as well eat it. Nobody's looking. Oh, somebody was so nice to give that to me. I really should eat it. Blah, blah, blah. I picked up the phone and I called the one person I knew in OA who said, put it in the trash. Go in the kitchen, put it in the trash, squirt dish soap on it so you don't take it out of the trash later, and come back and pick up the phone. And I did that, and he's like, you're abstinent. Have a nice day. So, like, that willingness to do something else besides put the food in my mouth. And actually, the way it's interesting, coincidentally, I just had back to school night, and one of the parents one of my students' parents brought me a gift of chocolate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I accepted it graciously, and then, you know, like, I just didn't eat it. Like, it's not my food. And so I don't know what I'll do with it, but then she asked me, you don't eat sugar? And I was like, no. I said, I used to weigh 300 pounds, and she was like, oh, really? And so we had this conversation, so there's now an opportunity for 12-step, mm-hmm. you know, like, who knows what will happen. But, you know, like, I don't even want that food. It's like, I look at it, and there's no charge. It's just like, I see it, and I put it on the shelf, I'll figure out what to do with it later. I could, you know, I didn't want to say take it back, but I could have, I guess. And then Oh, I only have one, not even a minute. I just went to, on the summer I traveled, I went to Barcelona, New York, Maryland, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Colorado. I traveled around to see friends and family. And it was all through the generosity of friends and family. Like, my friend in Barcelona sent me a plane ticket because I can't really afford it. I stayed with him. My family is on the East Coast. We had a family reunion. And when I travel, it takes extra work. I found that Barcelona had very few vegetables. And I had to really, it was weird. I wasn't expecting it. I had to work hard to stay abstinent in Barcelona. But I discovered this new way to stay abstinent through the corner store. You know, it was like cucumbers and yogurt. That became my thing. And then in my family, no one, you know, everyone's got obesity. Everyone has cigarettes, still chain smoking. Not everyone, most. A lot of drinking. One of my nieces got medical marijuana card, and she was handing out pot gummy bears to everyone who would want them. And so, you know, it was interesting to be around people who were using a lot. And then, but me, I just had my fizzy water and my abstinent vegetables, which I, you know, they all know my food plan. So they're like, here's the keys, you know, go get what you need to get, use the car. Mm-hmm. I take care of myself when I go. So abstinent no matter what. I think that's my message today. And I'm a minute and 20 seconds over, so I'll stop there.
Thank you.
Thank you.